You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking National League East with MLB.com's NL East beat reporters. We're doing a midterm report, taking a look back at the first half and looking ahead at the second. Getting some grades on the first half, some pleasant surprises and disappointments, storylines to watch in the second half, moves to watch for, and some predictions as to where these five clubs finish the season. Well, we are right about at the halfway point, a little closer to the actual halfway point than the All-Star break usually comes. And so we're doing look ahead and look back at the first half and second half. And so my first question to you, and I think the Nationals are one of the most interesting teams as far as asking this question. They've dealt with a lot of injuries, and they are in first place, but this was a team that was projected to be, by a lot of people, a 100-win team, a dominant team, and they haven't been that. So when you look at this first half of this Nationals team, is it good, bad, indifferent? I mean, is this first half kind of glass half full or glass half empty for this Nationals team?
I think it's half full. I think it's been good, considering all their injuries. I think the reason they're in first place is because of their pitching staff. There's no question about it. Max Scherzer leading the way, and Jordan Zimmermann as well. And I think if not for them, they would be in trouble right now. The hitting has been up and down. Surprisingly, it's like in the top 10 in offense, which is surprising because there are times with runners on base, they are just terrible at times. So, I think the glass is half full. Once everyone is healthy again, I think it'll be okay.
And you kind of answered this, but the next question is what is, if there is a reason or multiple reasons, and in the Nationals' case, I think it's some good and some bad, what is it that has them where they are right now, which is, again, first place but not running away with things?
Well, number one, they're in first place because, number one, of Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper is a guy who's just carried this team. He's been really the only guy who's been hitting consistently. You can say Escobar, but he's not driving in runs. Obviously, the pitching staff has done well with Scherzer and Jordan Zimmermann. And that's pretty much it. That's why they're in first place right now. And it could get better once the injuries are all healed.
What's the single biggest pleasant surprise for this team so far in 2015?
I would say, believe it or not, Danny Espinosa. I mean, Danny Espinosa, in my opinion, kind of saved the season because if he was hitting the way he did the last 2 years, I think this team would be in trouble right now. And I would say without a doubt it's Danny. You know, he's hitting, he's not striking out as much, and he's getting key base hits, and that's good to see. I think that's what everyone expected out of him 4 or 5 years ago when he first came into the Nationals. And I'm happy that he's really hitting the ball well.
And then on the opposite side, what's the biggest unpleasant surprise of this club so far?
Well, I think there's two. I think one is Ian Desmond, obviously. I think everyone expected him to have a bang-up year going into his free agency year. He's not hitting. He's not playing good defense. And I would have to also say Wilson Ramos as well because – Wilson Ramos has not played well defensively. He can't seem to catch a ball from the outfield when trying to throw out a runner. Hitting-wise, he's been just okay. I think a lot of people expected him to really hit for power, driving a lot of runs. And I think he's been kind of a disappointment in that factor.
When you look at Desmond, it seems like, you know, he's certainly not where he wants to be. He'll show flashes, and then it'll sort of fade again. Do you see any signs of him getting traction, of him getting to where he would want to be and where the club needs him to be?
Well, I would say yes and no. I mean, his biggest problem, and I spoke to a scout, and Matt Williams confirmed it, you know, he's leaving his shoulder is open. It's a mechanical thing. It's also a mental thing as well. Ian Desmond said he has to make sure he has to get things straightened out mentally as well. Make sure his swing is okay mentally and also physically as well. So, I mean, hopefully, the second half of the All-Star break, you would hope that he would get things going and his hitting going as well.
What's the number one storyline to watch for this club in the second half?
Without a doubt, it has to be the trade deadline because you don't know. You have four guys who are free agents, and that is Desmond, Pfister, Spann, and Zimmerman. And you would hope that these guys are around for the rest of the season, but you just never know because the Nationals, you know, really need to improve their bullpen. In my opinion, they also need to improve their offense, you know, even though they're 10th in the league right now, because I just think they need more than just Bryce Harper to carry this team. And, you know, if I'm the opposing pitcher right now, I wouldn't pitch to Bryce Harper right now because I think they have nobody to protect them. So that's going to be interesting.
So you think there is some chance they would deal off the major league roster in order to get upgrades between now and the deadline?
I think there's a possibility of that. I think they have enough, strength in the minor leagues to make a trade. And, we have to see what happens. I mean, the Nationals are just not going to make a trade just to make a trade. They need to make something that's going to help them in the long run.
Give me one move for this team that needs to happen.
I think, without a doubt, it's they got to improve the bullpen. I mean, outside of Drew Storen, I think they don't have David Carpenter has been good, but this is just six games for him. And I think they need someone to be consistent, the seventh and eighth inning before Drew Storen. So I just hope that they can get somebody. Who that is, I would not be surprised if it was Tyler Clippard. And it's definitely not the guy from the Reds, the closer for the Reds. I forget his name now, but there's no way. They wouldn't do that for Drew Storen again. And Drew Storen has been that good as a closer.
So it's not because of the money that they wouldn't do Chapman? You just don't think they'd bring in a ninth-inning guy?
No, because it makes no sense. I mean, Drew Storen has done the job. I mean, he's simply... he's their lifesaver in that bullpen right now. They need a more consistent guy in the seventh and eighth inning. The long relief hasn't been that bad, but, there's no guarantees what Tanner Roark could do. Tanner Roark has been in the rotation, out of the rotation, so he's been in and out. So you just hope they can get a guy who can be consistent in the late innings.
And then one last question. When we look back at this team at the end of the year, be it first week in October or first week in November, what's the final result for this team? I think everybody figures they're probably still a postseason team, but are they? And if so, how deep?
You know what, Matthew? Right now, I don't think they're a world championship team. I think they're a playoff team. I think they're still going to win the division, but they're going to have to get it together offensively and in the late innings, in my opinion, in order to go all the way. So you just hope that they can add someone to help Bryce Harper. And I think once Jason Worth comes back, he'll be a big factor because of his high on-base percentage. He could be the leadoff hitter if Denard Spann is not coming back. So I think Jason Worth is going to be a big deal for the Nationals once he comes back.
We're at more or less the midway point, a little past it, and so it's time for a little look back to the first half and look ahead to the second. And I think the Mets are one of those teams where this is a really interesting question. They're two games over 500. They're three games out of the division lead. They're very much in the hunt, and yet it times has felt like a frustrating or disappointing season. So first of all, just kind of big picture, how do you grade this first half? Has it been basically good, basically not good, somewhere in between? How do you kind of assess where the Mets are at this point?
It's sort of been a first half of two extremes, and only just now recently are they starting to middle out, because you had the first half of April, really most of April, where they were great. They were one of the best teams in baseball. They won 11 in a row. They were hitting not a ton, but they were certainly hitting enough, and they were pitching amazingly, and there's no surprise why they were in first place at that point. Really, since the day that 11-game winning streak ended, and for about the next 2 months or so, they were one of the worst teams in baseball. Record-wise, there was a long stretch where only the Phillies were worse. And while the pitching was still great, they just weren't hitting at all. They're still really not hitting, but they've managed to level it out. The pitching's been even better somehow, which is incredible to me. So, you know, going 4-2 on a 6-game West Coast trip that really, you know, going into it, you looked at it and you said, this could be a disaster for them. Well, it wasn't. It was actually great for them. So maybe they're over that hump. Maybe they are getting to a point now where in July with the trading deadline coming up, they can do some things. They can improve in a more consistent way and really make a race out of this. Because, you know, we saw it in April, they can be a very good team. We saw it in May, they can be a very bad team. And whichever they wind up being in the second half is ultimately going to determine their fate.
It seems like, and as it seems like, it's true, that by and large the lineup has been what's held them back when they haven't won. If you could point to one or two reasons that has been the case, that they haven't hit more, because I don't think people thought this was going to be a bad offense. I don't think we thought it was going to be a juggernaut. I don't think anybody thought they were going to struggle this much. What is it that's missing most about this lineup that's keeping it from being good enough for them to be where they want to be?
Well, the company line is injuries, and there's definitely some truth to that. They haven't had David Wright for all but 8 games this year, which obviously is not ideal. Travis d'Arnaud has made multiple trips to the disabled list, and he's been one of their best hitters when healthy. He just hasn't been healthy very often. They went a long stretch without Daniel Murphy, and so on and so forth. They just really haven't had their full complement of hitters for almost all of this season, and that's hurt. You know, but the other side of that is that happens to a lot of teams, maybe not to this extreme, but it's not that the Mets are unique in that aspect. What's really hurt them just as much, if not more, is they just haven't had any stretch of time where they've really had 2 or 3 guys get it going at once. You know, they had a little stretch where Curtis Granderson carried them. Great. No one else was hitting at that time. They had a little stretch where Michael Kadire was hot, but that was surrounded by stretches and where really he just looked lost at the plate. Now he's dealing with a knee injury, and that's hurt them. And, you know, you can sort of go up and down. Wilmer Flores was hot for a while. He was ice cold for a while. And you can just go up and down 1 through 8. They really haven't had even a week where, like, 2 or 3, even 4 guys are hitting. And it's really hard to sustain rallies that way, especially when you have an offense like the Mets that's not really a power-hitting team. They don't hit a lot of home runs, so they're not going to have a big inning. They need to string together 3-4 hits, draw some walks and innings if they want to put up a really crooked number. And just the way it's been going, the way they've struggled to put those consistent at-bats together, have those consistent stretches from multiple guys has just really undermined them.
What's the single biggest pleasant surprise of the first half for the Mets?
Single biggest pleasant surprise, in my mind, is probably Jacob DeGrom. And not that I didn't think he was going to be good. I think everyone assumes he would be good again. But he's been well beyond good. What he's doing now is pretty comparable to what Matt Harvey did 2 years ago. I mean, Jacob DeGrom is unquestionably the best pitcher on the staff right now. He is probably one of the top 5 pitchers in the major league. You know, you can go back a year, you can go back 9 months, 15 months, whatever window of time you want to look at, and it's pretty much every statistical category you can look up. It's Jacob DeGrom and Zach Greinke and Clayton Kershaw are the guys who lead them. So the fact that this guy, and we talked about him so much last year, who came out of nowhere, was never really a blue chip prospect. The fact that he went on to win Rookie of the Year last year, but has come on this year and is only getting better. You know, his velocity's up. He's as this season has gone on, his strikeout rate has been up, and his walk rate is way down from what it was already minuscule last year. The fact that he has just developed into this superstar pitcher, essentially, is surprising to me, and one of the key reasons why the Mets are afloat as they are.
What's the biggest disappointment on the field so far?
Biggest disappointment would have to be David Wright. I mean, you know, we went into this season and, you know, you asked me at the time what was the most critical player for the Mets. I said, absolutely, it's David Wright, because he was sort of at a career crossroads coming into this year. Can he stay healthy? Can he still be an effective hitter as he gets into his early to mid-30s? And now all of a sudden you have a major injury. where not only this season but his future career is in doubt. That's just a monstrous blow for the Mets. And you know, you wonder how and if he's going to be able to recover from this, how and if the Mets are going to be able to recover both on the field and off the field. You know, one of the biggest presence in the clubhouse in franchise history, really, you're talking about. And also one of the best hitters in franchise history. So the fact that he's only played 8 games this year, the fact that we're getting into the All-Star break and we still don't really know when he's going to come back, if he can even help the team when he comes back, what kind of hitter, how often he's going to be able to play. There's just so many question marks surrounding David Wright at this point. And that's just, you know, looking at it from where we were in March, it's just a huge disappointment for the Mets to not be able to answer those questions.
It might be the same answer he just gave, but what's the number one storyline to watch for the Mets in the second half?
Well, yeah, that kind of is the same answer. I mean, it's definitely David Wright. What happens with him? And both, like I said, both in the second half and going forward here, because this guy's still under contract through 2020. He is still a massive part of the organization's future plans. And, you know, if he has some sort of major setback or if it becomes clear that just he's never going to be the same, I mean, that's a huge franchise-altering thing for this team. So, you know, you hope we'll get some answers in the next month or so, and we'll really be able to figure out what this guy is going forward. But he's just so important to every single thing the organization does. Yeah, he's absolutely the one to watch.
With the acknowledgement that this is not an organization that pushes all its chips in the table, into the middle of the table almost ever on much of anything, what's one move that this team needs to make between now and the deadline to really get where it wants to go?
Well, they need another hitter. I mean, and I don't care if you want to get, say, a Ben Zobrist type who can fill in the infield, or if you want to make a push for the outfield. And it doesn't have to be a major push. You don't have to go out and get Justin Upton. You know, while that would help, obviously, but someone who can be an impact bat, even if it's 3-4 days a week, they need to do something. They're clearly not willing to give up one of their big four starting pitchers to do that. Fine. I don't begrudge them that. I don't necessarily think they should. But the 1-8 that they trotted out every night in the first half just didn't get it done more often than not. And without changing that, without adding some sort of bat who can make a difference, who can hit some home runs, who can add some power production to the club, you know, it's hard to envision anything more than a lot of the same in the second half.
So give me a prediction. Where does this team finish the season? Do they make the postseason?
I think on this podcast, you know, in March, I said, I'm not sure either way, but I can tell you in the last week of the season, they will be fighting for something. I think they're kind of in the same place. I wouldn't change that prediction very much. I do think they're going to keep it interesting the whole way down. It would surprise me if they're out of it on September 15th. It would surprise me if they have anything sewn up at that point. And I think that's essentially where they are. The pitching is good enough to keep them in it. The hitting is in a state where it's going to be a struggle. So, you know, the Nationals have yet to pull away, despite the Mets' best efforts at times to let them do it. There's really not a ton of teams in the wild card right now that you're scared of pulling away. I think the Mets are going to be keeping close eyes on the Pirates, on the Giants, who they took 2 of 3 from this week. But I expect them to be right there. Whether or not they make it, I think it's going to come down to a couple games, a couple bounces, all that. But, yeah, I expect them to be right on the fringe once we get into the late weeks of September.
Mark, it's mid-season. It's actually a tick past mid-season, and so we're doing our look back to the first half and look ahead to the second half midterm podcast. And so the first question I have for you, and I think it's an interesting one with the Braves, is how do they view this first half? Is this a good first half? Is this a so-so first half? I mean, the external expectations about this club were very low, but I think internal expectations were a lot higher than that. So for this team to be on the fringes of contention, right about 500, is that good, bad, or in between?
I think the team is very happy with where they stand. They said all along that they knew that they didn't have the best looking club, the most talented club. At the same time, they have stuck to their commitment to make sure that this was not going to be just a season that they punted away. They weren't going to allow it to be a 100 loss season. They like the way that the team has fought through, you know, some tough stretches. And a lot of that is attributed to the leadership that A.J. Pruszynski, Johnny Gomes, some of the guys that they brought into that clubhouse. There's been a different attitude. And while that has had an effect, has had a positive effect this year, it is also, they're hoping, will continue to have an effect on some of the younger players within the clubhouse. Now, where they go the rest of the season remains to be seen. Maybe they continue to just be a 500 club, but I think that they're very happy and intrigued by how these next few weeks go leading up to the trade deadline, because they're still not exactly sure which way they're going to go. The one thing I would say is, whether you debate whether there's going to be buyers or sellers, the one thing they won't be is significant buyers. That's the one thing. Maybe they grab a piece here and there, but yes, they're very happy to have given their fans a chance to continue to look at the standings through the entire first half.
What's the biggest pleasant surprise about the first half of the 2015 Braves, or at least the biggest pleasant surprise for people other than me?
Well, that's you took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, I was ready to say that. Yes, you definitely deserve credit for, if we go back to early April and we talked about what are the Braves going to do with the center field position, you pegged it correctly. I kept saying, hey, look, they're going to play Eric Young. You said, why not play Cameron Maven? If he's healthy, he can live up to his potential, and he has done exactly that. Cameron Maven is just, I would say, if you ask me who the biggest surprise is, I'll say Cameron Maven. You ask me who the team's most valuable player is right now, it's been Cameron Maven, because, what he has done since he gained the everyday job on May 2nd is, energize the top of that lineup. Played great defense, provided speed. He's done everything that you could have expected. I believe first time maybe we saw him in the Futures game was 2006 or 7 there, and he's 28 years old right now. He is that player. And the one thing that I didn't realize how much of an effect it would have, what I've learned over the last few months, is being back close to his home in North Carolina has really energized him. He loves going out in the field and hearing people say, stuff. Hey, I'm from Asheville. This kind of stuff. He's a different player. He's the guy that the Tigers, Marlins, and Padres at one point were hoping that they were going to get. If you go back to, like I said, he took over the everyday job there in early May. If you would have asked me in early June, will they trade him? Part of the thought process was, maybe they will trade him right now because the value is never going to be higher. Well, we've gone through 2 months right now. This is not a fluke. This is, I think this is who Cameron Maven can be, will be. If they get significant value for him, maybe they would trade him. But this is not just one of those, hey, let's dump him before he falls. I think what we're seeing right now is a guy who can provide you significant value on, both offensively, defensively, and with his legs.
And in the opposite direction, what's the biggest disappointment for this club so far?
Well, we continue to talk about Julio Teheran, and I think you have to. Despite what he's done the last two starts, which, provided some encouragement, here's a guy, a 24-year-old kid, I think the best thing I heard from a very experienced veteran, was that he's lost his identity, what we've seen is the fastball. The fastball command has been very inconsistent. He started shying away from the four seamer, fell in love with the two seam too much. The two seam kept running out over the middle of the plate against left handers. Left handers have had their way with him for most of the first half. Recently, he's had a little more success against them. If he can turn things around, if these last two starts are some indication of where he's going, obviously it's going to help the Braves win some games, down the stretch. At the same time, if he is one of those key pieces that they try to use this offseason to get the big bat that they need, obviously he can enhance his value. But based on what we saw in his first two major league seasons, to see him going to the break with a 4+ ERA, He's obviously been the biggest disappointment. Fortunately, they've had other people in the rotation who have stepped up. Obviously Shelby Miller and Alex Wood has taken charge or has picked things up here lately. To where it hasn't been a significant detriment to the entire rotation.
What's the number one storyline to watch for this club in the second half?
Well, I think these next few weeks, where are they going to go? It's they've gone through this stretch here right before the break, where they've had the opportunity to play three consecutive last place teams. That's allowed them to right themselves, get away from that rough stretch where they had at the end of June, where they were facing DeGrom, Syndergaard, Harvey, the Pirates staff, Scherzer, Zimmerman, without Freddie Freeman. I think basically where they stand, let's just throw out July 24th, 25th, is going to have a lot to do with who they deal with and who they end the season with, because you've got A.J. Pierzynski going to draw some attention from some teams that want a left-handed bat. You're going to have some teams call about Jim Johnson, Jason Grilly. Obviously, if you trade Johnson and Grilly, your bullpen's going to be much weaker. You lose a Pierzynski. Now, all of a sudden, Christian Bethencourt's going to have to come up. It's going to be a much different-looking club. So I think the storyline for the second half will be dictated by what this team does over the next 2 weeks.
Which sort of means that you almost can't answer the next question, but within this framework with so many kind of moving parts, is there one thing that you can point to that this team needs to do between now and the deadline?
I think that they just need to continue to have this mindset, this kind of chip on their shoulder that, hey, it doesn't matter who is here. We just need to do whatever we can to stay in this race. And I think that Nick Markakis and Johnny Gomes did a great job of that the first day of the season. They trade Craig Kimbrell the night before the season starts, and they show up in Miami the next day at the ballpark, and Markakis and Gomes stand up and say, it's not about who's not here. We don't focus on that. And I think that has kind of resonated with young players like Jace Peterson, and obviously Maben has helped out some there. It's provided a little bit of a different identity with Freddie Freeman, because that wasn't necessarily the message he was hearing from some of the guys he was with the last couple of years. So I think it's a club that no matter who is with them, they need to realize they've already made great strides to be a club that could make some noise in 2016, because the piece, the foundation is there, and the club has shown a commitment to do whatever whatever is necessary to make the most out of this season. And I think this winter is going to be very interesting.
Finally, where do you think this team finishes this season?
I think that this club's probably going to be right around 78 to 81 wins there. I think right there, that 500 club, that it's going to finish third. But I think at the end of the season, when we go back and you ask me, if we do this again at the end of the season, the end of the season wrap up, you say, was this season a success? I would say it was, just because just because the culture has changed, the foundation, that they've got an idea of where they're going. They know that Jace Peterson can be their second baseman for the future. We need to know what Jose Peraza and Malik Smith are going to be the next couple of years. It's neat to see, a guy like Tyrell Jenkins is now at AAA as well. That has been fun. To where I've covered this team for a long time. I don't remember another season where you wake up the next day and you look at the minor league box scores, because you really want to see what all these prospects that they've acquired over the last 6-7 months have been doing. And it has been fun to watch the Malik Smiths and the Tyrell Jenkins. And obviously we've seen a lot of them to get to Atlanta already. So uh, I, I think the fan base has been energized by that as well.
Joe, we are just past the halfway point coming up on the All-Star break, and it's time to do a little midterm report, look back, look ahead. It's hard to be too excited about the results the Marlins have gotten in the first half. Given that what they have done without, though, given the injuries, what kind of grade would you give them for the first half?
Oh, gosh, it's a failing one. It'd probably have to be a D, you know, C minus at the very high end. I mean, this team was, you know, eyeing to be kind of don't sleep on them because everyone's going for Washington coming out of spring training. They thought they matched up very well with the Mets and really liked what they had and, you know, was going to kind of have everything fall in place, get Jose back, which he is. And in so many areas, they've just fallen short. And their desperation was reflected in the fact that they had a managerial change, you know, with 5-6 weeks into the season. So, as rough a go as I can remember in a long time here, especially given the expectation.
If you could point to one reason why they are where they are, what would it be?
Oh, boy. You know, it's a combination of things. But, you know, I think that they would be in much better shape if the bullpen had locked down some of these games. You know, I think that the cumulative effect of, you know, having so many late leads, and not just Cishek early, but others as well, you know, losing leads in the seventh, eighth, and ninth at a time, you know, if you flip them into something even more on par with what good teams do, they're a lot closer to 500. You know, they certainly wouldn't be over it, but they wouldn't be, you know, 15 and, you know, teetering there. And I think that those blown saves really kind of had a demoralizing effect on the whole team.
What's the biggest pleasant surprise about this team so far?
You know, it's probably, you know, I gave this a lot of thought, and I have to say probably the middle infield. You know, when they traded for D. Gordon, they were really looking for a guy at the top of the order, a guy with that game-changing speed who could play really well in Marlins Park, a guy they thought just have him work with Adani Echevarria at shortstop, and then Perry Hill, their, you know, very respected infield instructor. And D has come as advertised, and Echevarria has just continued to be, you know, playing at a really high level. You know, he was an all-star caliber guy, defensively as good as there is. And together, those guys have really, really kind of been the bright spot of the season, you know, and the consistency. And consider this, Matthew, from their opening day lineup, let's go to the first eight, you know, the position eight, every one of them, except for Gordon and Echevarria, has either been on the DL, designated for assignment or released, or demoted to AAA. Those two guys have been the steadies and the constants, and the defense and the fun they bring every night make a rough first half worth watching.
What's been the biggest disappointment for this club so far?
You know, I'd have to say the offense, Matthew. It's all things considered, you know, we knew that without Jose that, you know, that they were going to probably be a little bit down pitching-wise, but they certainly expected to score a lot more runs. And it's really baffling because the type of year Stanton had in the first half before the injury, I mean, he was, you know, putting up some really incredible numbers. And D at the top of the order, what he was doing as well, it just didn't calculate, you know, that the talent and the amount of run production and or lack thereof. You know, you could say, you know, they banked on Salto Amakia being productive. He was gone after 1 month. Michael Morse was hurt in May and hadn't played till the other day and not very productive as well. Ozuna, you know, finds himself in AAA because his lack of production. Yelich is starting to become the Yelich we expect, but it just happened in the last week or two. And, you know, basically at the time Stant went down. So the probably the biggest disappointment is this team definitely should have scored a lot more runs, and they're paying the price for that.
What's the number one storyline to watch for this team in the second half?
I'm going to say it's going to be Jose Fernandez and Giancarlo Stanton together to see for the first time to get them on the same field, you know, at the same time, and see what an MVP caliber guy and a Cy Young caliber guy, how this team, you know, which clearly, you know, they need a miracle to get to the postseason, but you know, if they don't show improvement with a healthy lineup with those two guys, and they both should be ready to hit their stride at least by August, they could still salvage the second half and the final 2 months and really kind of say that, you know what, the core is worth keeping together as they move forward. But I think having those two guys on the same field at the same time, it's something I'm going to be certainly looking at down the stretch.
What's one move that this team needs to make between now and the deadline?
They're probably going to move, you know, a Latos or, you know, a starter that they don't have controllable after this year. I think Brad Hand will be on the move before the deadline as well. And, you know, I could see Matt Latos being, you know, a guy that's going to generate a lot of interest by the end of the month. And you could lump in Dan Haran, but I don't think they find the urgency to move him as quickly as they do with Matt Latos.
If they were to make moves like that, what kind of return would they be looking for? More major league ready guys if possible, or just to kind of restock the system?
Yeah, I think the latter. I think they're going to be looking at double A or above, or, you know, certainly controllable young. You know, it could be really interesting. And I'm going to throw something out there. It'll probably be a long shot, but something to keep an eye on. Ozuna's struggles might have them thinking whether to even possibly move him, who's going into arbitration, who has Scott Boras as his agent and is not really inclined to doing an extension, that I wouldn't be shocked if Marcell Ozuna would be at least in play, that they had listened to try to, you know, return a more prototypical center fielder.
Excuse me. And then just broadly, give me a prediction. Where does this team finish the season?
Oh, boy, I think right now they'd be happy with a third place if they could somehow unseat somebody there. You know, the goal has to be 500. You know, if they can exceed that, the better. You know, they have a lot of ground to catch up. This is, you know, trying to prove again that the core guys are worth building around and taking this thing and just kind of almost chalk this up as just a year where nothing really went right and, you know, some unusual circumstances, the freaky Stanton injury. You know, just to kind of track north and not just let this year get away, because, you know, just a week ago, talking to some scouts, they're like, this is a really dangerous team, even without Stanton, when they were starting to do some of the things that they're capable of. So, you know, this could be a team down the stretch. If they don't get where they want to go, they could be the type of team that's going to have an impact in who actually goes to play in October.
Todd, we've reached the midpoint, and so it's time for a little first half review and second half look ahead. I don't exactly know how to answer this question about the Phillies, but because the first question we have here is just kind of, is this first half good news or bad news? But it's kind of hard to see good news in here. So overall, just kind of how, I guess the good news or bad news is organizationally. Is this organization in better shape than it was 3 or 4 months ago?
Well, I would say yes, in the sense that the minor league guys and the farm system seems to be stronger than it was last year at this point and going into the season, because you're getting some answers now on some of the draft picks from the past couple of years, and the results have been encouraging. You're getting some positive results from some of the international signings. That's been encouraging. And so, you know, it doesn't necessarily translate to success for the 2015 Phillies, but for a rebuilding organization that's thinking, hey, 2017, 18, 19, and beyond, there are some things, I guess, to get excited about. So overall, I think things seem to be moving in the right direction. It's going to take a while to see those things, successes translate to the big league level, but you know, a lot of, you know, they're going to sign this Dominican outfielder you know, very soon. I think his name Jalen Ortiz, 16-year-old power hitting slugger, $4.2 million deal. I mean, they're really super excited about him. So there are some things to get excited about.
Excuse me. I think it's fair to say that even within the organization, there weren't really high expectations of this being a contending team. But I think it's also fair to say that internally, they probably didn't expect the results to be this rough. They didn't expect to be on pace to be right, a 54 and 108 team. So what's the biggest reason that they haven't at least been more competitive like I think they would have expected?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the rotation. The rotation has really struggled a lot more than they thought. You know, they were hoping, kind of keeping their fingers crossed, that they would have Cliff Lee this year, at least for the first half of the season. Obviously, that did not work out. They were hoping that Jerome Williams could kind of be competent in the sense of, you know, a four and a half ERA. He was about 6.5 before he landed on the disabled list. Aaron Harang was pitching pretty well till he went on the DL and had some rough starts right before that. But the rotation has really, really killed him in a lot of ways. A lot of guys with ERAs over 6, not being able to pitch into the 6th inning, that's really taxed the bullpen. So now interim manager Pete McCannon is sitting there. He's leaving guys starting pitchers in longer than he normally would because these pitchers are all, it seems like they're pitching 2 innings every time they go out. So I think that's really hurt because while the offense struggled earlier in the season, they've really actually the last month have actually hit the ball pretty well. And I think they were like 8th in the league in scoring, 8th in baseball in scoring over the last 3 weeks. But they've only won like 5 or 6 games because the starting pitching has kind of buried them.
Let's look on the bright side for a minute. What's the single biggest pleasant surprise of the 2015 Phillies?
I'd say Michael Franco, and I say that because there's been so many guys that have been coming up through the system that the Phillies have been hoping would hit, and not that he's proven himself and he's out of the woods by any means, but Michael Franco came up and he's really handled himself quite nicely. The Phillies have been desperate for a number 3 hitter, and he's been that for them. And I don't think it's any coincidence that the offense has started to kind of tick upwards since he kind of got comfortable at the plate and started playing and playing well. So I would say he's the most pleasant surprise.
And in the other direction, what's the biggest negative surprise for this club?
I would say probably Chase Utley in a lot of ways. Not that they were expecting great things from him, but the fact that he struggled so much and, just to see him struggle as much as he did, I think deep down they were hoping he would kind of have a good season and they'd be able to flip him to a contending team like they did to Jimmy Rollins in the offseason. But, those plans seem to be pretty much shot at this point. And, it's kind of, in terms of disappointments, I think it's just disappointing to see this kind of iconic Phillies player possibly finishes his Phillies career the way he's finishing it right now.
As we look ahead to the second half, what's one main storyline to watch with this team?
I think the biggest storyline to watch, if we're going to go like an overarching type of storyline, I think it would be the continued development of the young players. I think if we were going to get specific, I would say, let's see what Aaron Nola can do in the second half. I think Aaron Nola is going to get called up sometime before the end of the month, after the break and the end of the month. You'll see Aaron Nola pitching for the Phillies. Everybody's really excited about him. So it's going to be interesting to see what he can do up here against big league hitting. Now, nobody expects him to be the replacement for Cole Hamels. Most scouts will say he's going to be a number 3 type of guy, but they need a number 3 type of guy, a guy that can pitch 6 2/3, 8 innings on occasion. But overall, to see Franco, Freddie Galvis, Cesar Hernandez continue to play well, to see maybe something more from Cody Ashey, to see something at all from Dominic Brown, those are the types of storylines I think people need to watch for in the second half.
This may be the hardest question of all for you. What's one transaction, one move that this team needs to make between now and the end of the year?
I think that they have got to. I think they've got to trade Cole Hamels, and I guess you could throw Jonathan Papelbon in there. But Ruben Amaro Jr. Said recently that hey, we're trying. We've had some internal discussions about when's the best time to trade him, hinting that maybe it might not happen until the off season. Personally, I think that might be a little bit of posturing on his part to kind of tell teams that we're not going to cave in and give in to your demands. But I think it's time to move on. You've had these guys kind of dangling out there for over a year now. Cole Hamels, strike while the iron is hot, get what you can for him, and then kind of move on from this.
And now get out your crystal ball. Unfortunately, I think we know the answer broadly in the standings, but how does this team finish the year? What are we talking about when we talk about the end of the 2015 Philly season?
Well, win-losses, it's hard to say. Certainly they're on pace to lose well over 100 games, but I think if you're a Phillies fan and you're trying to find something to look for to kind of sit down when you're watching a game at night and kind of enjoy yourself. I think what you're hoping to see is, hey, wow, Michael Franco is actually, you know, he really kept up that pace throughout from the time he got called up to the end of the season. And boy, Cesar Hernandez, he really hasn't cooled off much offensively. And, you know, Freddy Galvis looks like he could be a player, you know, or you know, Cody Ashey, you know. Boy, he really seemed to come on in the second half of the season. I think those are things, those are the, you know, if they can keep going, that would be a positive. But, you know, and really that's all you had to look for at this point is to see how these young players do and how this rebuilding process continues to go.
MLB.com Extras, thanks everybody for listening.